Moncrief on News Talk.
Earlier this week, the New York Times picked up a Pulitzer Prize for its reporting on Sudan. And leading that team was Mayo man Declan Walsh, chief Africa correspondent for The Times. Declan, good afternoon and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Now, while people are rightly horrified by what's happening in Gaza, Sudan is actually the largest humanitarian disaster in the world at the moment. Could you give us some idea of just how bad things are there?
It's pretty shocking. It's not only the biggest humanitarian disaster right now, it's probably the biggest humanitarian disaster in decades, just by the numbers. There's about 30 million people in the country that need humanitarian assistance. There's a famine that was declared last year and is now spreading across the country. And there's the effects of, 2 years of this enormous civil war that's been, characterized by massacres and ethnic cleansing and even accusations of genocide. So it's just really, a tragedy that is horrific, both in its scale and in the kind of abuses that people are suffering.
How much aid are people getting there? And given the decisions about US aid, has that aid dramatically reduced in the last few months?
Yeah, the decision by the Trump administration to suspend aid back in end of January had a really an immediate effect on the ground. We were in Khartoum just in late March, and we visited soup kitchens which had been dependent on American money in areas where there was no other source of food. And those soup kitchens, hundreds of them, closed virtually overnight as a result of those spending cuts. But that's just one part of it. The bigger problem is that because so much of this country is really cut off from the outside world by the conflict, partly because it's dangerous, very hard for aid agencies to get in, partly because both sides in the conflict have been accused of weaponizing hunger or using hunger as a weapon of war. That means that, there are millions of people who really aren't getting much or any help from the outside, and that's really fueling the suffering and fueling the huge death toll.
Yeah, the actual war itself between the RSF and the Sudanese army, what are its roots?
Well, it started off as what looked like a power struggle between two rival generals, or rather two factions of the security forces. You had the regular Sudanese army, and then you had this paramilitary group called the RSF, which the army itself had essentially created and fostered over many years as a sort of proxy force that the military used to quash rebellions in parts of the country that felt they weren't getting a fair shake of the stick. And that goes back to the Darfur conflict 20 years ago when, many of the leaders of the RSF now were leaders in a notorious militia called the Janjaweed that carried out huge massacres. So these two, rival groups, which had come together just in 2021 to seize power, their leaders fell out. These tensions bubbled along, and then in April 2023, it erupted into a civil war. But since then, part of the problem is, Sean, that it's just spiraled into something that's much, much bigger and more complicated. You've had foreign powers piling in on either side, supplying weapons, trying to back a winner in the war. You've had places where this war has spilled over Sudan's borders into neighboring countries. And that just means now that it's no longer just a war between two sides. It's also involving other countries. And that just makes it all the harder to try and find a peaceful solution to it.
How much has gold got to do with all this?
It's a big part of it. One of the reasons why Sudan is a country that these foreign powers want to control and meddle in is because it has enormous deposits of gold, some of the largest gold deposits on the African continent. That group, the RSF, they became rich before the war by controlling gold mines and then later by controlling the gold trade. But on the other side, the Sudanese military has also had stakes in the gold business. And in fact, since this war has started, the gold business has boomed. There's more production. While the economy is collapsing, while so many people are suffering, The amount of gold that Sudan is producing has actually gone through the roof.
My word. Now, you mentioned, you know, all, various powers backing each side. Is this correct that the United Arab Emirates, UAE, is kind of playing both sides at the moment?
Well, before the war, the United Arab Emirates definitely did have strong connections with both sides in this conflict. But really, since it's really gotten worse in about the last 18 months, the UAE has firmly taken sides with the RSF. They've been, our reporting has shown that they've been running these arms pipelines, secret arms pipelines through neighboring Chad and through other countries. They've been sending very sophisticated drones in that are carrying out strikes across the country. They've hired mercenaries from places like Colombia and elsewhere to train the RSF and even to fight alongside them. So on that side of the conflict, we see the Emirates playing a strong role. On the other side, we see Russia, which has actually, through the conflict, supported both sides. In the beginning, the Wagner mercenary group was supporting the RSF. And then, but more recently, since the death of the Wagner founder, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Kremlin's actually switched now to the other side, and they're very much with the Sudanese military. Again, supplying weapons in exchange for either access to minerals or indeed for access to the Red Sea, because one of the big things Sudan has also got is it's got hundreds of miles of coastline along the Red Sea, you know, one of the world's busiest shipping lanes. And currently, and of course, across the sea from Yemen, where the Americans are carrying out an intensive bombing campaign against the Houthis at the moment.
My word. When you come back from places like that, and you might go back to Ballina for the night and you're having a pint, you just kind of think people are just awful.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, unfortunate. Well, you know, it's one of these conflicts where, like many conflicts, it brings out the worst in people. And you see people motivated by greed or by ancient, you know, very old grudges that they resurrect and they try to prosecute. On the other side of the coin, you do also meet people who are incredibly inspirational, you know, who rise above all of this. When we were there, we met these volunteers who are running food kitchens to help people. You know, you met people who, at the start of the war, when everyone else was fleeing, they decided, and they could have left as well, they told stories about how they stayed behind to try and help people and stayed on in the worst of circumstances. And, you know, I think, while it's easy to focus on, and one should focus on the suffering and try to find accountability for the people who are responsible for it, it is also heartening to see that you do find people who, you know, offer the others, you know, offer are inspirational, frankly.
Well, Declan, congratulations again and keep up the good work. Declan Walsh is Chief Africa Correspondent for The New York Times. Declan, thanks a million.
Thanks, Sean.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.